Accession number 31415.
Real 13. Now, you were talking about... Did you ever get one of the American space heaters?
No. But we'd seen them. We never got any. I think our CEO had one. Colonel De Vigus.
What was he like, the Colonel? We haven't talked about him much. Colonel what?
Colonel De Vigus.
What was he like?
He wasn't a bad lad. In actual fact, he never interfered with anybody. He never imposed himself on anybody. The only time he imposed anything is if anybody was brought up on a charge before him. But as regards to talking to his own officers and talking to the men and listening to what the men had to say, he was very impartial. He was a good man. He took over from a Colonel Carr, because Colonel Carr came home.
Did you have him, the Colonel Carr?
Yeah, I only had him for a couple of weeks.
So yeah.
But I never met him, I saw him.
Any other characters you remember?
Oh, there was Major Monckton, which became Viscount in later life, Viscount Monckton.
What was Major Monckton like?
He was another one, never interfered with you. He came round and talked to you and asked if anything was wrong, because we didn't have a squadron leader when we was at RHQ, because the old man was there, he was the leader. He was in charge of the squadron, more or less, and the leader, with the 2IC. And then there was the RSM. See, the RSM was there. And he done most of the work in that kind of business.
Who was the RSM?
The RSM at the time was... what was his bloody name?
Didn't matter much.
I can remember some of the others, but I can't remember his name.
So, anything else happened before you left in November? I know it's routine. What about the shelling? Did you get much shelling?
We didn't.
On the RHQ area?
No. But they were falling sort of short of us. But we used to get it night after night. And rockets. And
but not actually reaching your lager?
No, not reaching our lager. No.
So what happened? What, anything else? Any other stories that give us an idea?
And then on the upper side of the road, there was an American outfit pulled in on the other side of our lager. And they come with these, what they call persuaders. That was the nickname for these pieces of artillery. And they had the right bloody name. The size of the shells they fired when it went to the other side. I hate to think what happened on the other side when they landed.
And how did you get on with this unit?
Oh, we never interfered with each other.
You didn't speak to them?
No, it's just more the time of day. But they only used to stay for a couple of nights and then they'd move on to another location in case they got spotted, you know what I mean? Through intelligence. And then they used to move. They were always on the move, artillery. Our artillery never did, British artillery. They moved about occasionally, but those that were up supporting infantry battalions, they stayed with the infantry battalions.
So there's nothing else you really remember about your time there?
No.
Okay. So how'd you come to leave?
Well, we just waited for an advance party, and the main party, we didn't even meet the main party. We met the advance party.
And who was relieving you?
1st Royal Tank Regiment.
And what was the takeover? I mean, did they take all your vehicles? Or?
Yeah, we left everything as it was. They came, the advance party came, checked the vehicles over. They couldn't move them. Well, they moved them backwards and forwards, and that's about it. They checked them that they started up. Same with the tanks. They just checked that the tanks started up. The gun barrels were clean, ready, lightly greased, in case the old man's have got to go out as well. Everything was combat ready. Had to be combat ready. Everything, we had to be already combat ready. And they just came and took over from us. And then on the morning that we moved, we didn't actually see the actual men that were coming to our leader. We actually passed them on the road. Because as we left, as we sort of went out of the entrance to our leader, as we went out, 1st Royal Tanks was on the gate, on this where this small guard room was. They'd already came in, and our blokes came out with their kit, chucked it in the back of the lorry. They came in, and then they had lorries were passing us. They were brought in by Royal Army Service Corps. Then once they were dropped off, the service corps went back to their echelons, you know. And then we got all the way to Toc John Railhead again, back to Toc John, to get the train. And the train was there waiting, and also was the pipe band of the Black Watch. And the Black Watch played us off right till we pulled out of Top Chun, we loaded the train. There was loads of other troops getting on as well, those that were coming back to Blighty. We thought we was.
What was the train journey like then?
Same as usual, horrendous. And these wooden slatted seats, I don't know if you wouldn't remember them, we used to have buses like that here. And they were like slatted, wooden slats, and the back, and God, you'd be doing this after a while, or getting up trying to walk around. Because they, bloody, you used to get sore sitting on them, you know what I mean?
So what happened when you got to
Busan? And
then
they used to come round, and we had rations come. As we got on the plane, the train, we was given a pack of sandwiches. The old Avocet rations. But when it came to the hot drink, they came round with the Dixie. That was in hay boxes on the train. So they came round with the hay box, and you had your mug, which was, as I said, we had this 44 kit, and it was fitted on the bottom of the... it was an oval-shaped mug, like a half moon, fitted on the bottom of your water can, your water bottle. And they came round with the Dixie and the ladle, hot coffee, and they had the sachets of sugar from Compo rations. And if you took sugar, well, I did in those days, you know, you just take two. Don't take none now. And, and the journey was it took us nearly 2 days to get the Busan. I mean, and it kept stopping. And we had to keep getting off. Oh. And then they would check the train for get underneath and checking the train. Because we never travelled fast. We never went along an express. Well, no, in case the lines had been taken up, see? By, you know, infiltrators. That was what it was all about, you see, because they used to infiltrate the lines. And because we never had any windows in the carriage. So those with their weapons, with rifles, sat near the window. And the, who had their Sten guns, they sat near the windows, at the window seat. Well, you'd been now. These seats used to be about 3 or 4 wide, and you'd have a table down the middle, so all the gear was on the table, and the blokes, you know. And eventually, we got to Busan. Went on the ship straight away.
Now, what ship was that?
The Halliday was there. The Halliday.
Empire Halliday.
Yeah, the Empire Halliday. Yeah.
And did you think you were going to England at the time?
Yeah, we all did. We didn't know nothing. That's another story.
Okay, so you left in what, November?
Yeah, late November. Because we was at sea for Christmas. We'd left Singapore. When we left, there was a big Yankee band, chromium plate, steel helmets there. And this, with all this, they had the full band there with sousaphones, the lot. And they were playing this off, you know, and the audience, they were smart. About the only time I see a smart Yank, apart from their military police, their snowdrops. But they had all these chromium, what I remember about them, they had these chrome helmets, still wear them today. They're bandings, don't they? They had this full band, and they were terrific. What a band. And I forget what they played. They learnt and they played it all wrong. They played the regimental march fairly well in the skinny. But they didn't have the right, you know, the sound wasn't right. They more or less jazzed it up. And they were playing it as we was walking up the gangplank to go on board the ship. And that was about it, really, for Busan. When we got to Busan, we went on board the ship. Once the ship was loaded, I think we left in the evening. I think it was evening time when we left. We sailed out, and that's it. It was night time. We had a drink, opened the wet canteen, changed out of our DMs, because we had DMs then. Changed out of our DM boots, because we was in brand new battle dress. We never had the Commonwealth sign on our sleeves. The old man wouldn't have it put on.
So you changed.
And we had our new ribbons on our
jackets. What did you change into?
Battle dress. And we had brand new battle dress. And we had to put our numerals, we had a new set issue with new numerals and coloured off. We had to fit them on. We had to do that the next day on board ship. New lanyards, we had everything that was brand new. That was the only thing that was really brand new. And and we got issued with new what's names. We kept parties. We kept all that 44 kit. We kept all that. And when we set sail, and then we sort of made our way back. And it wasn't until on our way back we went ashore at different places. You know, the normal. We went to Hong Kong, went ashore at Hong Kong, had a few hours at Hong Kong.
So a bit like on the way out.
Same as on the way out. On the way back, same. Oh, when we on the way back, the new Naffy Club had opened. By the time we was in Korea, it opened about in the middle of, I think it was about June, May or June, this new Naffy Club. Fantastic place. Want to see the swimming pool. Blokes, all in the tiger beer. Thinking this tiger beer around us. Blokes was diving in with their clothes. They weren't getting stripped off. They were diving in their jungle grips. Because we changed back from battle dress into tropical kit when we was just outside Singapore, because you could feel the heat. You was getting nearer and nearer to Singapore. You could see the weather was changing. And of course we was in that right through until we got past Colombo, because Colombo's the same. And what I remember about Colombo, the beauty of Colombo, each time we sailed the Indian Ocean, it was like going across the Serpentine. It was flat, like a mill pond. It was magnificent. And the flying fish, as I said again, I used to love standing on the side of the ship, trying to get as fast forward as I could of an evening with the sunshine, and watch the flying fish as the water bow used to break the water. It was fantastic to see them. And the different fishes that used to come up, you know. And yeah, we changed it to the jungle greens, back in the jungle greens. Then when we left Singapore, it was about 3 days out of Singapore, 3 or 4 days, we changed back into battle dress, and we stayed in battle dress. As we the more further we was coming from Korea, we stayed in battle dress. And then we got to Aden. When we got to Aden, we left Aden, and we was in the Red Sea. And the regiment had to muster aft of ship. And we all mustered after the ship. I think they called it a quarter deck, and I think something like that. I don't know what it is. Anyway, we were all on the muster. And that is when the colonel told us, we're getting off at Port Said. That's all he said. We're getting off at Port Said. We've been ordered. But apparently, I think he knew before we left Korea. I think the old man knew. He never said, but that he said that we're getting off. So all kit will be packed when we get. Make sure all your kit is packed when we what's left Port Suez. Because once we leave Port Suez, we want to be ready. Because by the time we get the other end, we'll be in 24 hours. We'll be disembarking
at Port Said.
We disembarked at Port Said. So then we got told where we're going, Shandua. Well, we just passed bloody Shandua. Because it's on the Bitter Lakes. You see, we passed it, and we see all the tanks. We didn't realise.
Now,
where
are we going? How do you spell it? I'm
not Shandua is Shandur.
And that's in the Bitter Lakes?
Yeah, on the
Is that where you're going to be based then?
Yeah. And we took over from the 4th Royal Tank Regiment. We relieved the 4th Royal Tank Regiment. They did more than their term of Python, because there's so much going on. They did an extra year. They did, instead of a 3-year Python, they did 4 years, because the British Army, even then with National Service, was stretched to its limit.
So what was the situation when you got to Shandua? Well, how'd you get to Shandua?
Well, we went by Shandua. We went by...
This would be January, would it? Or was it December still? Just after Christmas?
Christmas, it would be January. We even had New Year's Eve at sea as well.
So
it was more or less January when we got to Shandua, when we got to Port Said.
How'd you get to Shandua then?
We got to Shandua by lorry, army lorry, service call.
What was that like?
Not too bad. The journey wasn't too bad. It was we went down the canal road, not the treaty road, because that's where we were based, on the canal road. There's very, very few trucks and very few military bases on the actual canal road that ran alongside the canal itself. Because we was right on the canal, so the most beautiful place to be stationed, you wouldn't think you was at in Egypt, was a place called Moasca. And we passed through Moasca garrison, to get to Shandour. And it was beautiful. It was all the actual canal road there on that part was lined both sides with palm trees. And you went through like a shade of palm trees. And when you looked, those that could see Moasca, you thought, oh, this won't be too bad. Oh, it'll be all right here. But I'm afraid we were living in a dream world. Because when we got to Shandour, all you saw was bloody sand for miles. And Paddy said, for Christ's sake, let's get out of here before the cement arrives.
So what were conditions like at Shandour?
Not too bad.
Were you in tents or...?
Tents and Nissanats.
Which were you in?
I was in a Nissanat.
And what was
the
it
round-shaped
like?
Ones. It was the round-shaped ones. Wasn't too bad in the winter time, coming up the spring. But after spring, May, up to spring, it wasn't too bad. But then when the summer did arrive, my God, yeah. Well, most of the lads slept outside.
Now, tell me, what were you doing there? What were your duties at Shandour?
Oh, we was, our main problem, we were actually guarding the canal. And we were the armoured regiment. Our main objective, in the outbreak of, hostilities with the terrorists, our main objective was to, we had just outside our main gate of our garrison, when we got to Shandour, and there was a bridge, a Bailey Bridge, over the Sweetwater. Why they called it the Sweetwater, it was beyond me, because it was actually fresh water. It wasn't, but the natives who lived in the village and the natives that lived alongside it, they did all their ablutions, their excrement, always floating in it. There used to be dead animals in there floating with bloated bodies. And we had a Bailey Bridge, and our main objective was we were to be the armoured regiment to defend Port Suez. Because at Port Suez was the main supply base for the canal zone itself. All the refrigeration plants, all the ration stores, the bakeries and everything was at Shandour, was at Port Suez. And our job was to get to Port Suez, whatever. And of course, when instead of going by road, our object for the tanks was to cross over the Bailey Ridge and then veer left and drive straight across the desert in battle formation. And then we, with the trucks and the MT sections of each squadron, would go by road with the ammunition and the men, like, you know, because we had assault troopers as well. Some of our lads were, besides doing other jobs, they were assault troopers. They were never tank crew. I never became an assault trooper. They were trained in infantry warfare.
Now, tell me about what your job was in the unit.
Oh, I drove a three. I ended up driving a three-tonner. And, of course, we was in a rather a large garrison, very large garrison on the Great Lakes. At the time, station was the South Flank Regiment, was in the same garrison. The infantry regiment, and they had one part of them, and there was also in our garrison a Royal Army Service Corps tank transporter unit, also a fully mobile Remy workshop, which was to serve not only the regiment but the garrison itself. That was the main.
Now tell me about your job driving a three-tonner. What were you actually doing?
I'd done general duties in the. We used to do general duties in the garrison itself. Sometimes having to go down to Fade, moving equipment because it was rather a large garrison. And the squadrons was based there. Even for HQ, I was putting the HQ squadron properly then. There was no RHQ when we became back. RHQ was just a separate part of our HQ squadron. It was still called RHQ, but it was only office staff. and they had proper brick buildings. They were in proper brick buildings. The same with all our stores in the HQ squadron, and the HQ squadron offices were brick buildings.
So you were just driving, what sort of thing were you doing driving?
We had Austin 4x4s, three tanners, half wood, half metal cabs, and we used to call them the screamers, because the transmission box of an Austin 4x4 could be here from Shandor to Cairo. It screamed, it literally screamed. You could never move them trucks if you was in an operation by night, because the bloody hell, they knew where you was coming. They actually, it was a scream coming out of the transmission box. And they were a weird, the steering wheel used to come up through the floorboard, not through the front like the QLs, and the fold and the 4-3 tunners, they were rubbish and all, 4-3 tunners. They used to come straight out the floor, and the clutch was on the left-hand side of the gear column, the foot brake was on the right, plus the throttle, and they never came out on an angle, they came straight out the floor. So you just put your foot flat, and the gear stick was an L-shaped gear stick. It came out of the gearbox from behind the engine block, engine cover, and went along the top of the engine cover, so you was changing gear. And it was, and they did a job, but they took some getting used to. They really did. And especially with the steering column being straight, you sat like that, actually, to drive it.
Sat pretty upright.
Upright, yeah, you sat upright. we were always being used. And then eventually, a certain amount of married pads came out to us with families. So then I was put on a TCV.
What's a TCV?
Troop carrying vehicle. Now, this was a QL, Bedford QL, with a special body on it. No windows, but it had a special body with doors at the back that opened out, and steps that came down when you opened the door, and a door on the side near the front, behind the cab, there was another door on both sides. There was one on each side, left and right. They had steps that folded down. And when you got in, and you climbed up and you got in, there were rows of seats. There was so many at the front, sitting like a bus, facing the front, but the main was sitting down the middle, sideways on, in back to back, and then another row facing inwards from left to right, and they'd be doing the same in the middle, back to back. And I used to be used as the school bus, and I used to have to go every day when they came and they started school. The school was in Fade, and I used to take them of a morning, early morning, and the children to school, and we went with an armed escort. There was armed squaddies on board, troopers on board, with a corporal, with submachine guns, not rifles, submachine guns, Mark 7 Stens, and their pistols. And also escort front and back, a dingo, and we had dingoes, scout cars, and a Humber. We had a couple of Humbers, which were long and low, very long and low, and they had twin Browning 303 machine guns mounted. On the Humber had twin machine guns and a searchlight. And the dingoes had a single mounted. They did have Beezers, but we changed them for Browning machine guns, which were a better machine gun anyway. And they were armed. And they was front and back. And then the armed ones were sitting in the back. And then I'd have one sitting next to me, armed escort, and my own. Well, I had a 38. I was back to carrying my own 38 because I was a driver.
Now, was there ever any trouble on this trip to back?
No,
to
we never had trouble going backwards and forwards. But one time we had a regimental do. We had it down somewhere. I think it was in a bar with a big open garden called, the Green Valley. Everybody knows the Green Valley. You have been to read it. And we had a regimental do there. We had a dance. And we invited the local WACS, Women's Royal Army Corps, Army Corps, the Women's Royal Army Corps, and other women, the Queen Alexandra Nursing Corps, because we had our own military hospital in the Suez Canal. And we invited other... There was WAFs came. And different people were invited at the same time, but they were different from different parts of the canal zone. Now, only a certain amount could come because it was a regimental do, so it was limited for space, but we did invite them as guests to the do. And at this particular do, all invited guests, they never paid... We never paid for the buffet, what we had. We didn't call it that, I think. We had another name in those days. Anyway, we had food and drink. We also had free drink, free beer, and it was called Stella Artois. No, sorry, correct. Stella Beer Blanc, French. And it was brewed in Cairo. Well, every pint, first pint I ever drank of that stuff, like every other squaddy that went to Egypt, shut his eyes before he drank it, kept his eyes tightly shut. I've never drunk a beer in my life like it. But it was all right once you got the first pint down, because you didn't give a sod. You know what I mean? But it was the most vilest tasting beer I'd ever drunk in my life. But that was all there was to drink. This Stella Beer Blanc. And it was brewed in Cairo, and it belonged to the same brewery in France, Stella. No, it's Belgian, isn't it?
Stella Belgium, beer. I think, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's... You get Stella here, don't you?
And anyway, what happened at the dance?
I had a great night. Anyway, on the way back, we all cut back in three tanners and that. And I don't know what, but the first three tanner was coming down. The dingo never spotted it, and he was coming down the front. And the first wagon went into the terrorists put an old-fashioned steamroller, and I mean a steamroller, in the road. And, of course, they'd all been drinking, didn't they? And they offered to say, of course, the Vargas, our colonel. No, my lads are all right. They'll drive the trucks back. And I was all pissed as fast. Like. Anyway, they're coming down the road. They didn't see this bloody... Well, they hit this... Bloody thing was flat out, and they hit this steamroller. And one of them three-tonner jacks came out and hit my mate Reg Archer in the head. Opened him up right across there. Yeah, and the driver and the co-driver was badly injured. Anyway... Cut a long story short, we got round them, the rest of us carried on. And the medics came out, and they jumped out, and we used to have a 1500 weight as well with these assault troopers in the back, regimental assault troopers. And they knew what to do, and they surrounded in the desert, off the road, with their weapons, and they took up positions, you know, in case there was terrorists who were going to attack this particular three-tonner. They took the rest off. The rest was given first aid treatment until they got out to them, the medical corps. And they came out with ambulances from Fade to take them back to the British Gen. I think it was called 27 or 29 British Gen Hospital, Fade. Anyway, we went back to camp. There was hell to pay. Oh, God. We all got back to camp, and the rest of us got back all right. And the old man, and I went down to see my mate, because he was a mate of mine, Reggie Archer. And he came to my old hill. And he was in hospital for quite a while. He was never sent home. He was stitched right across here.
Across his forehead.
Yeah, right across. And it went that way, from the forehead that way. Anyway, he never went home. He never got sent home. He stayed in the hospital of Faye till he was till better, and he came back with... Still had stitches in his head, and he was like on light duties. And anyway, what he did, he went up. He volunteered to. He thought, "Well, no." He said, "Well, I'm on it, but I'll go up." He went up and he volunteered to be a steward in the officers' mess, because then we had a proper officers' mess with everything. It was brick built, and their billets were brick built. Their rooms, you know, and they had all upmarket accommodation. So we went up there, but all the office staff, all the mess staff, I went up there for a while, not for long. They were short of staff, so I went up and volunteered. And when you was on